Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. For more information, visit corin.com.
Welcome to Japan Eats. I'm your host, Akiko Tema, a food writer and the director of the New York Japanese Culinary Academy, which promotes a deep understanding of Japanese cuisine in America. We are broadcasting live from Brooklyn, New York. This show is all about Japanese food and food culture. We see sushi at every day in the supermarket, but what is beyond sushi? We hear dashi, ramen, izakaya, but what is that exactly are they? Japanese food is so mystery for many people, and I try to demystify it in this program with my cool guests. My guest today is Jean-Baptiste Mounier, who is the chef owner of Kodawari Ramen in Paris. Jean-Baptiste was an Air Force pilot in his home country, France, when he had a revelation to become a ramen chef. And in April 2016, he opened Kodawari Ramen in Paris, and his focus on creating the best ramen has been as sharp as flying a military airplane. And he makes everything from scratch at the level even Japanese ramen cooks never think they would do. So today we'll discuss how Jean-Baptiste was drawn into the world of ramen, his authentic yet inspiring philosophy of ramen making, and the utterly unique ambience of Kodawari dining room, and challenges in cooking ramen in Paris, and much, much more. But before we start, Japan Eats is available on the Heritage Radio Network website, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. So please go to iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, whichever you listen to, and subscribe to Japan Eats. And please write a review. We really appreciate your feedback. Now, let's start a conversation with Jean-Baptiste Mounier. Hello, Jean-Baptiste. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Hello, Akiko-san. Arigatou gozaimasu, and thank you very much for the invitation.
This is special. Arigatou gozaimasu. So, to get to know you first, where are you from, and what did you eat when you grew up?
So, I'm French. I'm from Paris, and I ate a lot of French food, of course, but my big passion was for Japanese food, even when I was a kid. So, I was having like regular French food, and also I was having sushi in the 80s. But very, very quickly, I discovered that there was something different. And at the age of maybe 10 or 11, I started to cook Japanese cuisine.
Wow. So, I mean, I'm sure that your parents didn't cook Japanese food at home, right? But you just started to try.
Not at all. The thing, I was lucky when I was a kid, because my parents every weekend they were inviting me in a different restaurant style, and so I could discover like Mexican food or Indian or and then Japanese, of course. And so I had this education to open my mind to other food, other type of food. And I don't know, for many other reasons than food, I was attracted by the Japanese food.
Amazing. Okay. And so I heard that you used to be an Air Force pilot until 2015. So what made you switch your career to a ramen chef in Paris?
Actually, it was the, you know, when a passion, we all of us, we have a plan B or passion, and we say, okay, one day I dream to be that or to change my life. And for me, this dream was to become a ramen chef. And for years and years, I grew this passion. And at some point, the passion was so big and became just ridiculous. Like, for instance, if I if I had like 2-3 days off, I was just going to Japan to work in a restaurant. It didn't make sense. So I say, okay, my life is ramen, it's not the aviation anymore.
Right. So sounds like you went to Japan and you got to taste real ramen and you really got into it. So is you kept going back to Japan to taste more ramen and eventually you made friends and started to work in the kitchen?
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Wow. So I'm curious, how many restaurants, ramen restaurants did you go to before you became a chef?
I've been asked this question, but I don't know, maybe hundreds for sure, 200, 300, I don't know, but it's nothing compared to the real ramen otaku in Japan who can eat like 300, 400 ramen a year. So it's very little compared to these guys, but actually, let's imagine you have a strong passion for something and you think you know about it. And one day you come to Japan. My passion was ramen and I came to Japan, and you have to think that my first trip was in 2008. At that time, internet was very little. There was no book about ramen, nothing. So when I went to Japan for the first time in 2008, I was completely struck by what the ramen scene and culture was really about. And I said, oh my God, actually, I know nothing about it. And it just made me try to learn even more. And that's exactly where everything started. Even though I was already very attracted and trying to cook at home, but that first trip was the initial spark for everything.
Wow. I mean, to me, it sounds like it's more challenging than being able to fly an airplane. Military situation. So,
but honestly, no, because you know, Boeing or Dassault Aviation for the fighters, they make big books. Everything is written is pretty straightforward. But when you live in a Western country at that time, actually, it was a very unknown territory. You know, ramen. Like 15 years ago, it was very hard unless you lived in Japan.
Right. I mean, even in America, I think it was the beginning of 2000. So, yeah, we really took that ramen bug at a very, very early stage in the global ramen boom. Right. So what was so special about ramen to you personally? Like, you know, you could have gotten into Italian pasta, which is another huge world, right? So why ramen?
First, there is the I'm attracted. The Japanese culture is very something that I really want to try to understand. There is when I was in my youth. For example, my parents, you know, they used to be attracted by America. There was in the 60s when you were in France. There was the rock and roll. There was Disney. There was, you know, all this American culture that was spread everywhere in the Western countries. But in France, especially in the 80s, there was the manga, there was the video games, there was a lot of cartoons on the French TV. And all my generation, we became very attracted by Japan. And cooking was a way to try to understand a bit the culture. And ramen, why ramen? It's because it's probably the most dynamic and the most food culture in Japan, who has the most energy behind it. So if you understand the ramen culture, you understand what is, I think, Japan nowadays, with one foot in the past and the following of continuation of the love of dashi and why this there is a passion for what we call terroir in France is the love of local product, I mean, and respect of tradition. And also it's a new dish in Japan, and every 10 years it's moving, it's changing. There is new trend, there is new ingredients, and it's never stay still. So You can be passionate about ramen and it's going to be still moving all the time. So that's why ramen is my way to try to get closer to the the ramen culture.
I can't agree more. It's such a comfort food. People don't eat sushi every day, but a lot of people eat ramen very often.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And like you said, it's very traditional, but it keeps evolving. And that's a reflection of society, culture, and and the way you make ramen, for example. We're going to discuss later, but you use fish, which is a new trend. And exciting. And so, but how did you study cooking ramen? Because just by eating, it's just so hard to make it, right?
Yes. So actually, you eat, you like it. You want to understand, you know, to make an analysis of why you like it so much. So you try to cook at home. And after when I went to Japan for the first time, because it was so good, it was maybe one of the best food I've ever had in my life. So I say, how come it could be so good? And I just started to move and to go everywhere in Japan. I drove like 15,000 miles of road trip everywhere in Japan to try to understand what it was. And in every region, every village, I could try different type of ramen. So it was a good way to travel actually in Japan.
And so you find everyone and you ask questions to the chef?
Yeah, actually. And I met some people, and someone who was so important and is still very important in the ramen culture and is its expansion outside of Japan is Brian McDuckson, who has the blog Ramen Adventure. He's pretty renowned in the ramen world. It was a perfect bridge and link between the Western countries and Japan. He's a ramen lover, a ramen critic. He doesn't like this word, but it's what he is also. And he introduced me to some chef. And I wanted just to learn. I wanted to understand. And it took some time to be introduced in that world. And at some point, I felt like everything changed. I got invited to discover how it was in a ramen shop. I started to make some class, and a lot of doors started to open, and I was very happy for that. But I was dreaming about serving my ramen shop at that time. But it was still a passion. So it was, I was just doing it by love and not just with a business goal in mind, you know?
Right. Okay. Amazing. So we'll take a quick break here. And when we come back, we'll dive into the unique and very pleasantly surprising concept of Kodawari Ramen. So please stay with us.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio.
Today's program is brought to you by Corin, a supplier of Japanese chef knives and restaurant supplies. Corin is proud of their Japanese culture and traditions, but they want you to know that their products are not just for Japanese restaurants. The knives and tableware bring out the best qualities of food from every culture and fit into every restaurant, from French to Pan Asian to American, and that is why they're located in New York City, where people from every country in the world come to eat. Corin's Tribeca showroom is home to the most extensive collection of Japanese chef knives in the world, including Japan. Stop by to view their exquisitely designed tableware and the rarest natural sharpening stones. They have a whole range of knife services, from repair and rust removal to reshaping and realigning. Corin is dedicated to this ideal, bringing the highest quality Japanese design to your table so you can experience the unparalleled quality of Japanese craftsmanship in your home or restaurant. For more information, visit corin.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Japan Eats on Heritage Radio Network, HRN. I'm your host, Aki Katayama. My guest today is Jean-Baptiste Mounier, who is the chef owner of Kodawari Ramen in Paris. And Jean-Baptiste was an Air Force pilot in home country France when he had a revelation to become a ramen chef. So in April 2016, you opened Kodawari Ramen in central Paris. So what is the concept of Kodawari Ramen?
Actually, the concept is just to express why I love ramen and to try to remove one part of, detach a little bit of Japan and bring it back home in Paris. So that's why we have a special decoration. It's we say like immersive decoration. I don't know if it's correct in English, but we try to reproduce the emotion of being in the street. In Japan, or this very famous Tsukiji market, which unfortunately got closed and that doesn't exist anymore. So it's I want to tell about my travel, my journeys in Japan, and the emotion behind it. But this is just the excuse, the envelope to talk about the main thing is the ramen culture. And the goal of Kodawari, we were within the first to start a real ramen in France, and my goal was to do the opposite of what used to be the sushi start in the 90s. Actually, it was an amazing culture and became very very low level, very actually bad food. Convenience, it's easy to eat, but actually it's so far from what you can find in Japan. So I wanted to make the opposite with ramen. Being the first, I wanted to kind of define what was ramen with some values behind it. We can talk about it. Mm. And that's the concept.
Okay, actually. So you were like 300% of truth of a whole culture of ramen. So yeah, I mean, the Tsukiji market, it's a historic market, and it lasted a long time, opened in 1935 and closed in 2018, and now moved to newer modern facility called Toyosu Market, relatively close. But the your dining room, and the first time I saw it, it was just a picture of Tsukiji market, and it really made it physically. It's amazing. As if you are in a Tsukiji market. So I think everybody should just go and at least take a look. And then, of course, you really cannot not to eat ramen. So, yeah, congratulations. I really hope that you're going to keep it for centuries.
Yeah, thank you. But, you know, it's very selfish. I'm doing it because I used to love so much this market. I knew it will be closed at some point, like everybody. And I couldn't imagine that nothing will remain after the closure. So I thought, what if we could just make it back, if I create it in Paris? So it's very selfish, you know. It's fun because Kodawari becomes a concept, or okay, but actually it's just I love ramen, I love Japan, and it's as simple as that.
Mm, right. By the way, the name Kodawari means committed to or obsessive about something in Japanese. So I hear you have a lot of Kodawari, but what exactly is your Kodawari at Kodawari Ramen? In other words, what is your philosophy of cooking ramen?
Okay, so very simple answer. My Kodawari is to use absolutely no MSG in our food, and also to grow our own wheat. This is the core of ramen, is the noodles. So I wanted to develop and create wheat variety, and so it's a big part of the restaurant is the field, actually.
Right. So let's just dig into your actual ramen bowls that you make. So, but first, do you call your style ramen classic or creative?
I will say classic, and we try to push the boundaries of what is classic. But we don't do like fusion type of ramen. We don't mix the culture. For me, it's a real Japanese ramen, but made locally in France. So, of course, you have consequences behind this.
Right.
So it's a ramen we could serve in Japan. Classic in a way, but and especially in the DNA of what we do and the values that is the most important. So I would say classic, but pushing the limits.
Right. So, yes, is this classic? Let's just dig into that. Like, absolutely amazing classic idea of making everything from scratch and authentically. So you even grow your own wheat in France. And I've never heard of any Japanese ramen chef to grow their own wheat to, you know, or the noodles. And you make noodles, so that we're going to talk about later. But could you tell us about why you decided to grow your own wheat in France?
Alors, for two reasons. The first one is you want to make ramen. Where do you find the good wheat? And find the good flour. The good flour would be from Japan, so it didn't make sense. Nothing was developed in Europe to make ramen, nothing. So, and it didn't make sense for many reasons to bring it from Japan. So I had a friend, I still have a friend, who grew cereal, and he's a farmer. He has a lot of fields. And I say, could we make together, try to develop ramen wheat? And he say, oh, come on, I don't know if, I don't know what is ramen. So of course not. And after, so 8 years later, of course we did it. And actually it was fun because, it's quite slow. Actually, you put your seeds, you find the correct, seeds, but you need to wait more than a year, of course, to try, what you put in the soil. So it's a very long process. So it took years, to develop and change and make adjustments. And also we invested in a miller. So he has, we have the mill is, right in the middle of the farm. So it's completely made from scratch, from like to the field, to the mill, to the restaurant. So it's a behind the scene thing, but it's very important to have the knowledge and understand what we are talking about. And I'm very pleased with what we've done because first of all, it's different. But it really has the characteristic of what I wanted in terms of texture, taste, everything.
Mm. So, right. Well, I'd imagine, it's probably the term called terroir, which reflects where you grow things, process it, and you consume it. So naturally, that should be part of your whole best experience of eating something. Right, and also, I think freshly milled flour tastes way better than just something imported through like months of process and shipment in bad conditions. I would imagine you really perfected what's possible in getting noodles.
We try to, but you know, to be Japanese, I think is to be Japanese or to do it in a Japanese way is to make it local. Is to use local ingredients. It's to use sardine from the French coast to get the flour locally. This is very a Japanese approach, I think, to respect that. So I want like a Japanese person to come in France and to eat a traditional Japanese ramen, but made in Paris, and that he could say it's different, you know. The goal is not to make exactly the same taste that you could find in Tokyo. You need to express the, how do you say in English? Because we say terroir in French, but it's the taste of the weather, the taste of the soil, and the people who are working behind that. So in Paris, you can eat a Parisian ramen. Mm. And for me, this is very Japanese.
Right. I think so too, because I think Japanese cuisine's mindset is to eat something available and seasonal. Mm. And you just come up with something to be able to eat at the best condition, meaning fresh and maximize the flavor. So what you're doing is exactly what people think is just traditional Japanese cuisine. So, yeah, this is exciting. And then you also make your own noodles, right? So, yeah. I mean, it's making your own ramen noodles. It's hard in many shops just purchase noodles from reliable vendors, but how do you, what kind of, like you need a machine, right, to get, to produce the ideal ramen noodles? How do you get the machine in the first place? Or did you build it?
Some people dream of a nice car, but I used to dream about having a Yamato machine. It's a Japanese machine, very efficient, and especially the guys behind Yamato in Japan, they have a very interesting approach of ramen, very analytic and very with a very scientific approach, which I really like. So I wanted really to have this machine. Obviously, because we are producing our wheat and flour, obviously we had to do jikasemen, homemade noodles. And I understand people don't produce their noodle, but for me, a ramen shop has to do it. Even though it's not perfect, but at least there is some character, some identity. Of course we make our noodles.
Mm, right. And Yamato is famous and some people call it the Rolls Royce of noodle machines.
Yeah.
Amazing. So how do you describe the style of your noodles? Because there are variations in size, texture, flavor, and so on. Right. So what's your description?
Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to have noodles that had the real ramen texture, obviously. So it was a big understanding of the wheat variety, especially with the starch and the viscosity of starch. And then I wanted to bring real wheat flavor. And I don't like sometimes in ramen when the noodles are blend. The noodles is a star of the dish, and especially I had to force the French mindset. For them, it's what is important is the topping. This would be the pork, the chashu on top. For me, the most important are the noodles, so that they had to have some character, to have some identity. So yeah, they have this real wheat flavor. And we work, especially at the meal, we work for that. And they had to, so one shop is Kodawa Yokocho. We make like more thinner noodles, straight. And the other one, with the fish soup, it's a bit more humidity content, water content. And also we do it like temomi. So we work it again by hand, each portion. To get some flat and a different texture that is a bit unique. So it's a lot of work for us, but we try to push and the French to understand that the ramen noodles are very different.
Mm, right. I like the way that, your noodles for you is a foundation of ramen, because most sushi chefs say rice is the foundation of what they make. So the same idea. Mm. It's always there, and you can change toppings, but the most important part is always there. That's the carbohydrate and noodles or rice. So.
And it's actually it's fun because, you know, I'm very lucky in the Kodawari team. We have people who are coming from Michelin star restaurants, like three star, and so the first months when they come, they don't really even them. They don't understand. So I had to push and say, no, we don't care about the toppings. The most important are the noodles and the relationship between the noodles and the soup. So that's why if you don't, there is a DNA. You need to understand what is a ramen. And obviously, you need to think first about the noodles. Right. Otherwise, you miss completely the point.
Right. And you mentioned, out of two locations, Kodawari Ramen, Kodawari Yokocho and Kodawari Tsukiji. Tsukiji is the one we described, how crazy, beautifully you reproduced the Tsukiji market. So the Tsukiji, Kodawari Tsukiji, you focus on more fish, seafood ingredients, right? Which is not the mainstream in Japan even. So why did you decide to feature fish?
Because it was a challenge, and as you said, it was not mainstream. As I said, the goal of Kodawari Ramen is to try to define what are ramen and the energy behind the its culture, meaning like every time it's the trend and the new style of ramen is evolving. So there was no better way to make the less conventional type of ramen to try to describe what ramen is. So fish ramen is not as developed as, it's not so developed in Japan. Also, it's very good. And people were not expecting that. So they are expecting to have like tonkotsu ramen that is so developed in Western countries. So that was just to to push things, you know, and to do something different.
I tasted the fish ramen, and whenever I eat fish ramen, I feel lighter, cleaner, and I can eat more often ramen bowls.
Yeah, exactly. So, exactly. But we also make, to say the opposite, but we make one that is called sardine bomb, and actually it's like pure bitterness of sardine and with miso, it's kind of heavy. It's so tasty, it's so good. But even with fish, you can make something that can compete against the tonkotsu and richer pork broth. So it's really fun, actually.
Right. Wow.
I'm not a vegetarian. And when I opened the first shop, I had a lot of people say, complaining that, you don't offer vegetarian food. So I say, okay, but I didn't really want to do it. So as a challenge, I started to do it, and I wanted to make vegetarian ramen that can please everyone, even the people who like richer soup. And I think we achieved it, and it's very interesting. This is ramen, you know, you can, with almost any type of ingredients, you can make something really, really cool and special.
Mm. Hey, I'm looking at your menu right now. This is a sardine bomb. I will definitely try this. It's sardine and so miso and tare and the green sardine and Iberico pork. That's ridiculous. It's sounding really good.
It's so good.
Hey, like umami synergy all over. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I look forward to going back to Paris sometime. Just for this one. Nice. So now you have, the second location, Kodawari Yokocho. So you said you feature more known fish items at Kodawari.
Yokocho. No, Yokocho is a chicken based soup only. So it's farm raised chicken, and it's really the main ingredients.
Mm, right, so that's another challenge because people don't make chicken ramen very often in Japan either, and you do need a good quality chicken to make it.
Exactly.
Right. So where do you get the chicken from?
It's a farm not so far away from Paris called La Ferme de Luto. So they are farm raised chicken, local.
Mm, right. So that's another local sustainable and Paris terroir ramen. Okay. And so what is the biggest challenge in running an authentic, I mean, two authentic ramen shops in Paris?
The biggest challenge is that you don't have the ingredients. You have to understand that, I've been invited in New York by the Ramen Lab a few years ago. And in America, the catalog of Japanese ingredients is pretty rich. In Europe, because of hygiene rule or customer rule or because there was no demand, actually you don't have specific ingredients like kansui that you need for to make the noodles. You're talking about umami. It's really dashi and umami is my second with noodles is my second core ingredients so important to make ramen, and the umami ingredients are really lacking here. So I had to develop it with Japanese people who just started a katsuobushi factory in Brittany. And I pushed them to make special recipes of niboshi for us. So we asked some fishermen to get some variety of anchovies and or even sardines and different fish and to dry them in a Japanese way. But, you know, we had to create ingredients. That's why I think our ramen is interesting because we don't pick up ingredients from Japan. We had to create them, so it brings a unique taste, but in a Japanese way. So it's a quest, you know, to try all the time to have a good ingredients. Even Myanmar, just to my recent work is to try to get bamboo shoots from dry bamboo shoots from China. So I'm working these days to bring them because they are more tasty, more crunchy, more interesting. You don't have any ingredients in Paris.
Well, I even didn't know there's a katsuobushi or bonito flake factory in France. So you really have some interesting discoveries. And also, I think you are founding the future of ramen in a way because you're really showing how to do it for future generation. And I think you really are doing something inspiring for the future of ramen in Paris.
We are lucky to have a lot of success, so that's cool. But we try to show that we can have success, and also with a lot of work. Of course, it's more demanding; it takes more time for us. But we are trying to show a path. So maybe, unfortunately, all the competitors will not try to make it as good. But at least we show that it's possible not to use any MSG, for example. And try to make real dashi from good ingredients.
Right. And so who are your customers and do you have to make adjustments to your recipes for diners in Paris?
Nothing. No. No, we don't make any effort for the customers. We push the customers. We actually, niboshi. So for people who don't know what is niboshi, it's a type of dry little sardine. It brings a lot of umami, fish taste, but also bitterness. And we're not so accustomed to this bitterness in our Western food. But I love niboshi. So I'm pushing it with that. We all the time, you know, even in the saltiness, we had just nothing. We just want to make ramen that could be served in Japan. That's all.
Interesting. Yeah, it isn't like a Venn diagram. There are overlaps of, you know, palate. And for example, niboshi, I tried with the very tannic red wine, French red wine, with niboshi as just a snack, as like a, you know, pairing food. Mm-hmm. They go so well because of the bitterness. And I think that you are creating some kind of doors for them to try something they didn't try in a way they probably tasted before. So this is exciting. Yeah. You're pushing them.
Of course.
Right. So are there any skills as an Air Force pilot that you apply to your current career as a ramen chef?
Yeah, actually, you know, it's when I left the Air Force, what I missed the most was the brotherhood that you can have amongst the team and the people working with you. And this is a spirit that I could find back in the kitchen. It's a pretty demanding, a bit military organized work. Actually, there is a lot of similarities with what I used to experience and what we have these days. It's not completely so different. So actually, it's the only thing I know is aviation and being a fighter pilot and being in the Air Force. So this is what I use, and I found it back from my colleague, you know, in the kitchen. So yeah, it's very it's a continuity for me. It's not completely opposite.
Right. So there's a mission, and you lead the team, and everybody moves, work hard to get to the mission achieved. So yeah, that's interesting. And how do you predict the future of roaming in France? Because I, you know, we discussed you definitely showing the examples what you can do in France, right?
Yeah. So, you know, globally, the ramen is booming. We know it. I feel that because, you know, the good people who are like, I think about Shono, who opened some ramen shop in America. I think about Ivan, Keizo Shimamoto. I think about this type of people who are globally outside of Japan making the scene grow. Unfortunately, these guys have a lot of success, and unfortunately, there are a lot of people wanting just to make business. And so these guys will grow, of course, but they will not bring anything to the culture. I expect more and more people coming from Japan, maybe developing some chains outside of Japan, and expecting people who has a big passion for ramen. I would love to meet the ramen lord. I don't know him, but this is it was led by passion, I think, like me. And his goal is probably not business; it's just enjoyment and to develop something on ramen. So this is gonna grow, and we will forget about the only business, pure business people.
Mm. Right. So ramen lord, it's he came on the show on episode 280. He's Mike Satinova in Chicago, and he's as passionate as you are, at least. I don't know. Both are very explosive in terms of passion for and love for ramen. Right.
We need to pay attention about this, and this is kind of a mission for me, of course, but for all of us, even Japanese people. They are looking about this. They want to make sure that their culture, what they love, is not completely destroyed abroad. So it's a kind of mission to protect this culture and to make good ramen in a good way. And this is going to develop for sure. The thing is, ramen is so good. You can have, like, in every city in the world, a ramen shop without any problem. So let's show the path and the direction for that.
Mm, right. I mean, ramen has so many regional variations because it's so flexible, and the local seasonal ingredients, that's the whole point of making ramen. It's just a comfort food. So why not in France or anywhere? Mm. Right. But so I was going to ask you about your plans and dreams, and I just learned you have a big plan coming up this November. So what are your plans and dreams?
Okay, so I just before I'm talking, I will talk about this. I have a little plan that is I'm so happy about. Is I bought a little truck, very little, tiny truck from Japan, and we built what we call a yatai. It's a little food truck, basically. Mm. But this is a part of the Japanese culture where, as you know, old people were going in front of some station and they were serving some ramen, an expensive ramen. And I just built this food truck to continue this part of the ramen culture, and to keep it very simple and to go towards people in some local market in France. So I'm very pleased with that because it's a very cultural thing. We have a third Kodawari opening probably next year. That is quite big. And what you're probably referring to is our invitation to the Tokyo Ramen Festa. It's a huge event in Tokyo that will be held in November 2023. And I'm so happy with that because we are going to be the first foreigners to be invited in Japan for this event. So let's fight. Let's try to make something cool happen.
Right. So this Tokyo Ramen Festa, this 2023, it's October 26th through November 5th.
Yeah, exactly.
In Tokyo, 11 days. And sounds like really, really like at the former Olympic Stadium. And
I don't know if you've been there before, but it's you have to imagine a huge stadium with thousands and thousands of people coming. So there are 14 shops, the first batch of 14 shops, and the second part of the show is going to be another 14, and we'll be there for this in the second batch. It's a real honor, and I think it's probably cool for the Japanese to see how the ramen culture is evolving, because I was trained and formed in Japan. I grew my culture in Paris, and now I'm coming back. So it's pretty pretty interesting, I think, and it shows what is ramen these days.
Mm, right. Well, this is exciting because you go there in Tokyo. I'm sure you're going to absorb the latest of ramen culture in Japan, and also you have this truck. You can keep inspiring people in Paris,
exactly,
about, yeah, what's happening in ramen world, and also traditional flavor that they should try, because it's a comfort food, and it's not an expensive thing. You really put your soul, and this umami is the essence of Japanese culture, and you're just a really concentrated bowl of ramen you can get into, yeah, without flying to Japan. So this is exciting to me. And what's the third location? You have a new concept for your third location of the Kodawari?
Yeah, so the new location will be another part of Japan. So like we did with the two previous ones, I don't want to talk about samurai and geisha. It's going to be a real Japan, maybe unknown to most of us. So that's why it's very interesting. And it's, again, an excuse to make different type of ramen. So very different to the other one. Each shop should have no recipe in common with the others. So we have to start everything from scratch. And it's a new challenge.
Mm, so it's within the central Paris again?
Yes, again, yeah, exactly.
Okay, wow, I can't wait. All right, so where can we find your updates online and on social media to get to know everything happening? You have such a busy program.
Instagram. Mostly.
Okay, so Kodawari Ramen, it's Kodawari Ramen, Kodawari Ramen. And you have a website, that's the kodawari/ramen.com. So,
exactly.
Okay, right. Amazing. So, I'm so excited about what you do. And as a Japanese person, I think what you're doing is very, very good for the ramen industry. And I really admire what you do. So hopefully you can come back and give us updates on your new locations and your festival experience and what you're working on. So good luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us today too. So, listeners, if you have any questions or comments about the show or suggestions for show topics or guests, please contact us at Japanese@heritageradionetwork.org or kikotema.com. Japanese is a weekly program and is always available at heritageradionetwork.org, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify as a podcast. Our engineer is Matt Patterson, and thank you for listening. I will see you next week. Japanese is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.